Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is our first show in 2020, and we are so glad to be back. I'm Tina Godin, and with me this evening is Shannon Johnson. And tonight's topic that we will be discussing is resolutions and life-changing events. So this is going to be a great show with a lot of insight. And welcome, Shannon.
Thanks, Gina. It's good to be back on air.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So it does feel good to be back.
Definitely. Now, if we can all get the new year kicked off well, just before we went on air, you and I were talking about the flu that's in my house and that was in your house. So
yeah.
Hope our listeners are healthy.
Yeah, it's the never-ending, battle this year, it seems like. And it's a lot of people, too, you know. It's unbelievable. It comes and it goes, and it comes and it goes. And just when you think it's gone, wham, you get it again, some kind of, you know, virus or something associated with it. So, yeah, it's been tough. I know my kids have been, geez, we're going on 3 months now, up and down with sickness. So it's been a challenge, to say the least.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're able to hold the fort and still be laughing, because that's a long time to have to deal with an illnesses going on.
Oh, yeah. It's too much. And I just, you know, I'm on the other side of it, thankfully. I didn't think there was a light at the end of this one. You know, it just seemed like, wham, it would come again and something would happen to one of them. And then myself. So it's like, you got to be kidding me. The three of us, it's what a year, what a year. So I'm looking forward to the springtime when all this is all gone. And, you know, it seems like when they start school, and I know, you know, a lot of the listeners can understand too as well that have children. It's like they go to school and then that's it. We're done. We're done for a little bit. So.
Yeah. For sure.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. So we have a really good topic tonight. I think this is going to be fun.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you have to say about that? Resolutions.
Resolutions, yeah. So I was looking at the definition of it, you know, and it's a noun, a firm decision to do or not to do something. And, you know, I don't know about you, Tina, but over the years of attempting to make New Year's resolutions, I would always, you know, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And about 2 months in, I would feel like a failure. I let myself down. I'd get depressed. Like I was battling this thing that I put out there, and
mm-hmm.
then I wasn't satisfied. You know, I wasn't satisfying what I set forth. And then you go through this whole, you know, well, like you're a bad child. And it really got to be a struggle. Because, you know, here you end up, you want to start off the new year excited about things and, you know, it's a new beginning and this time we got this new decade going on and it's like, oh, we should be looking at all these new ideas for the new year. And I had to stop doing resolutions several years ago because I kept feeling like I was such a failure as a person that I couldn't follow through with not one resolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I gave up resolutions too. Yeah. Most definitely. Yeah, it's pressure. You know, it's stressful. And you get burnout from it because you go so gung-ho in the beginning. And it's like there's not a balance with it, right? So you end up burning out from it. And then there's that, you know, depression that sets in, like, oh, I'm a failure, you know, and all that mind chatter that will go on. And it happens to all of us, you know. You know, you're not doing good enough, or you're not good enough, or you should have done this. And you know, that inner dialogue that you end up fighting with yourself over this pressure that you've put on yourself. And it's, you know, it's unbelievable. And I didn't realize it till about 2 years ago when, you know, New Year's came and I'm like, you know what, this year I'm not going to do a resolution because it makes me feel bad. And I know everybody's doing it, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to step out of this box and I'm going to do things a little bit differently that feel right to me. And since I've been doing that, it's good. It's good. But it's funny, every year comes that, you know, time of the year, New Year's Eve, resolutions, and it's a tough one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they always talk about how in January the enrollment to the gyms skyrockets, you know, yeah. And then by March it plummets, you know, because everybody's failing, yeah. Going, I paid 2 months already, I made it once, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And weight loss, yeah, is always one of the biggest resolutions I hear from people. And it's one of the areas that we'll be able to get into tonight, and hopefully this will help some people. Because that was always one of my big ones, you know. Oh, I'm going to lose the 30 pounds baby weight that I've still got around my hips. I'm going to get rid of it this year. And it didn't happen. And it didn't happen. And we put a lot of money out when we look at our resolutions. You know, a lot of people will spend, you know, hundreds and thousands of dollars on resolutions to initiate them. And then even that adds to the depression, because then you're like, I just spent all this money and there's no way I'm going to get it back. You know, whether they bought gym equipment, right, for the home, or bought memberships, or maybe they're wanting to do a whole brand new diet. Maybe they want to do Atkins. And so now they've filled their cupboards with Atkins and they hate the food. So now you're not having any joy in even eating your food. And you've just put your whole mental brain into this tight vice going, I hate the food that I'm eating. I'm feeling fat. I spent all this money and nothing's happening.
<Yeah.
laughs> You know, you're like, and I can't even drop a pound. What do you mean? And it does. It gets to me because it was such an emotional roller coaster. It's like, whoa. So I'm really hoping that the listeners enjoy tonight, because I think you and I have both found some of the quirks with these things and some different ways to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not looking in the mirror and going, you know what, you really suck at this. I did that many years of going, you really suck at this part, honey. You need to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I decided once I realized that it was just not good for my mental well-being, I looked at it differently. I looked at it from a different lens, okay? And yeah. I went into, instead of doing it at the beginning of the year, first of all, I changed my timeline, because this can happen. We can make changes in our lives anytime. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Once I viewed the beginning of the year, oh, here it comes, we're at the end of the year, we've got, you know, got to make my resolution, I got to make these changes. Once I let go of that view of it, you know, and started making changes every day throughout the year, it didn't seem so heavy or so much pressure. Yeah, and so I learned to look at the time differently. So I don't have that sensation of, oh, I've got to, you know, like a lot of people in the world, oh, I've got to, you know, do this now, you know, New Year's coming and here's my resolution. I've got to lose, you know, like you said, weight, you know, 30 pounds, whatever it may be for, you know, anyone. I don't look at it like that anymore. I look at it as, how am I check in with myself daily. And so, you know, and I set goals. There's nothing wrong with setting goals at all. I mean, I set goals all the time. I have a journal. I write it down. But I don't, you know, we're going to go into the law of manifestation here, right? I don't say, oh, you know, this has to be done in 3 months or 6 months. I don't put that pressure on myself. What I continue to do, though, is set that intention out and what my wants and desires are. And it's okay if it's not met. Sometimes, you know, we don't have control over the divine timing of things too. And so it's okay. I've learned to let that go and accept any changes that may come or no changes that may come. It's kind of like being in that flow of everything.
Right. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
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 I like that. I like that. Yeah, I stopped with the resolutions. And, you know, for the new year, because I'll usually have people hit me up about, you know, well, what are you going to be doing for a resolution? And I'm like, I don't do resolutions anymore. But for the new year, I did start kind of going, okay, I want to look at how I want to approach the year. Instead of looking at, what do I see wrong in myself or in my behaviors or emotions? Instead, I started looking at how do I want to feel and how do I want that year to feel for me? And so instead I started going, you know what, this year I want to laugh more. Simple. I want to be able to feel joy more often in a tangible form. And this way, instead, I was focusing on how I was feeling, and how do I want to feel through the year? What parts do I want to look more for in myself? And for me, it's usually about bringing that laughter and joy more in, so that because if I'm feeling it, it's going to trickle out to all of my family members around me as well.
Right.
And then I'm not having to look at what, you know, what goals I want to do. Instead, I'm looking at how I want to feel and what kind of emotions do I really want to be like my, speak for my year. And then I'm not set up for failure. I'm just set up that, you know what, I just want to laugh more this year and I'm going to enjoy the people that I'm interacting with more. Cool. I have a struggle with weight. Weight has been a struggle my entire life. Being short, but big busted, you know, it doesn't matter. 5 pounds is like 50 pounds. And that's always been a big struggle for me. And, you know, it used to be my resolutions. And I'd do the whole thing about the exercising and the eating better and blah, 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 blah. And when I stopped that, when I stopped focusing that I needed to do this and approach myself every year about this issue, I ended up finding that I wasn't having as much of a weight struggle. When I stopped focusing on it and seeing it as a resolution and something I needed to really push on myself for that year, because I was always setting myself up for failure. I didn't like the way I was feeling about it. So I just stopped it altogether and was like, you know what? I'm not even going to look at that anymore. My weight is my weight. It is what it is. And now instead, I don't even look at my physical body and pick it apart and go, well, I need to do a resolution about this. Nope. Now instead I go, you know what, this year I want my body to just feel good. I want to feel good in it. And I'm not going to look at what the scale number is. I'm going to go on how it feels. Am I feeling energized? Then I'm going to serve my body what it needs to keep that energized feeling. Is it feeling tired? Am I feeling run down? Then I need to look at how, what is my body needing versus looking at it like it needed to be fixed and was wrong. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
My weight issue, it ended up changing the way my body was dealing with the weight.
That's incredible.
I was actually losing weight and without intention of losing weight. Is that not
weird?
I
love that. That's awesome.
And I think a lot
That's
of it had
awesome.
To do because I wasn't focused like it was wrong. I wasn't stressed out about it. I wasn't nitpicking at myself about everything that I was eating or anything like that. I just started, was like, no, you know what? Yeah, I'm eating better, but it wasn't a focus. You take the spotlight off of it, and instead you're putting the spotlight on how am I feeling today and how does my body feel, and okay, here we go. You know, what does it need? And it really ended up changing. I don't think it really impacted my metabolism. I think I altered the stress level my metabolism was fighting against.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. That's
yeah.
incredible. It's funny because, you know, my weight always goes up and down, up and down. I've been like this for years. And one of the exercises that I had to do in one of my the courses that I did in my mediumship courses, and she had us stand in front of the mirror, and you know, first we had to be vulnerable and say what we didn't like about ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and what body part we didn't like, right? So looked in the mirror, and then we had to practice telling that body part that we loved. You know, we love that part of our bodies. And, you know, I mean, at first I was like, oh, this is, this is fine. This, you know, but when you actually have to stand there in front of the mirror and then say it and keep repeating this exercise over and over again for weeks, it's amazing once you start accepting yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you start loving yourself, that, like you said, that focus, that spotlight on that is gone. And, you know, then you end up doing things that are, you know, better for you because I think your mind is in a better place. And so you're not so hyper-focused on this area or I don't like this about myself. There's that, you know, that mind chatter that I was talking about earlier. It
mm-hmm.
totally diminishes that mind chatter. And you speak more kindly to yourself, right? So you're speaking to
yeah.
the cells of your body and all of that. And so it's amazing the changes and the transformation that happens. And, you know, maybe not a lot of weight is gone, and that's okay. And it's that acceptance. And, again, it's how do you feel? And you said it perfectly. How am I feeling? If I'm not feeling energized or am I feeling energized? Does this food make me feel not so good after I eat it? And you start really noticing what you're putting into your body as well. And
mm-hmm.
that's what you start noticing. And it becomes at that forefront, you know, I didn't like eating, let's say, I don't know, a steak, right? I didn't
yeah.
notice it before, but now that I'm noticing what I'm ingesting and putting into my body, you know, it makes me feel this particular way. And so you can start tuning into your own physical body and
yeah.
know what is good for you, is not good for you, and you feel it. You absolutely feel it.
Yeah. Big time. It's amazing how much the body starts actually cueing you, you know, and
mm-hmm.
because I have times now that, you know, my husband will come over to me and he's like, "You got any ideas for dinner?" And I'll be like, "I need greens, a lot of greens. When we have green in the kitchen, you know?" And he's just like, "We just had a bunch of," and I'm like, "I don't know. Today I need the greens, honey. So whatever you got in the kitchen that's high in greens, that's what I need today." You know? And he's like, "Oh, okay." You know. But it does. It really ends up kind of breaking down some of the patterns because you're now allowing your body to cue you, and you're listening to the cues of what ones are feeling good and what ones aren't. It really ends up amazing to make a change, and it's so much easier because now you don't have that word diet hanging over your head. I don't know about you, but that word is a big four-letter word in my head. I can't, you know. I love the F word. I can say that all day long, but diet is like a big bad word out there.
Oh, yeah. Same here.
And if someone says it, I cringe. Yeah, you know, get rid of the words that don't feel good. If saying you're on a diet makes you gag and choke inside and cringe, there's a cue. Get rid of the word. Get rid of that mindset and shift it to, I want to start eating more by what my body needs. I'm going to start thinking of lifestyle changes in my food intake. You've removed the pressure and you got rid of that stigma word that hangs over our heads like a chopping block ready to strike, you know, and it makes it so much easier because now you're going to be moving with an easier flow and not have this guillotine waiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What's one of the other big resolutions out there that we can break down?
I'm trying to think here. Well, you know, maybe some people want to find, you know, more joy in their lives.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the big ones.
Yeah, it's usually like diet, exercise, love. Finding love this year. I want to find my partner this year. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Another big one. Yeah.
Let's see.
What you got for everybody on that one?
I'm looking at my list here. Oh, here's a big one. Here's a really big one. Quit smoking. Quitting smoking.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big one.
That's a tough one too. That's tough.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That is one I have yet to accomplish. I admit I've been a smoker since I was 14. And I can feel for everybody on that one. Because it's
absolutely
an area I have yet to be able to defeat for myself. I'm close. In fact, my daughter was just hitting me up about it the other day. Like, "Mom, why don't you switch to vaping? And that way you can cut down and da-da-da." And I was like, "Well, you know, I don't smoke regular cigarettes. I actually smoke filtered cigars. Not that they're any better. I don't advocate it. But you know, one of the things that I had said to my daughter, I said, you know, honey, I know that this is an emotional route. It's a coping mechanism for me. And it is for a lot of people out there, right? Things that happen to us that this venue was legal and acceptable, and we turned to it. But I had told her that. I said, you know, honey, I know where the root is. I just have to sit down and dissect it again. Because I've addressed it a few times, but I haven't gotten to the deepest part of it in order to release it and be able to move into letting go of the habit itself, right? And I've noticed with a lot of people who quit smoking, it'll end up, we shift to a different type of addiction, right? Because we haven't looked at the emotions of why we picked it up to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who quit smoking, we turn to food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you're like, great. So now instead of picking up a cigarette, I'm picking up a Snickers bar every time. Because it's a coping mechanism that we haven't solved the emotional root to. Where was the trauma that triggered the need for an addictive outlet?
Yeah. You're right. It is a coping mechanism, especially, you know, if you're dealing with anxiety, it's a release, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're feeling anxious or stressed, you pick up a cigarette and it's, you know, takes it away in that moment, right? At least some people think that in that moment. That's a tough one. I used to be a smoker myself, so I know exactly the struggle. The struggle is very real. And still to this day, there's times where, man, you know, it could be, I could, you know, fall off the wagon that quickly, you know, and it's, that's a tough one. It really is. But once, you know, you could be a non-smoker for 10 years and still, I mean, you know, it's funny that I'm saying this because just the other day I was dreaming about it, that I was smoking again. And in my dream, and I woke up and I'm like, oh, my God, you know. And it's funny because it sticks with you. It's a very – that's a tough one. But you know, it can be done. It can be done, but it takes
– yeah.
It takes a lot of strength and willpower, for sure. And just like even anything else in life takes strength and willpower, you know, willpower. So that's
right.
That's a tough one, and I empathize with everyone that does smoke. But I'm here to tell you, it can be done. So.
It can be done. Yes.
Done.
Yeah, you know, I think we also a lot of society looks at quitting smoking like you should be able to just do that. You know, you should be able to just put it down and walk away. You know, and yet we'll look at alcoholism, drug addiction, all these other types of addictions, and we see the struggle and we'll acknowledge that how difficult it is, but we downplay the struggle of cigarette addiction. And
correct. Yeah.
It makes it even harder for someone who is trying or made that their New Year resolution to quit. The pressure becomes insane sometimes, you know? And to sit and say, God, I'm really craving one right now. Oh, my God. You'll have people turn around and give you the dirtiest looks and judge you like, oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, they don't understand. They don't know what that feels like, that feeling. They weren't in your shoes. You know, they're not you. If they've never been a smoker, you know, they really don't understand it. you know?
Right.
And it's, yeah. And I think if they did understand, they'd have more empathy, more compassion, mm-hmm. more understanding, more support, I think, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that would be, you know, those qualities would be there if they really truly did understand, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, both of my parents have always smoked. My dad, who passed, he had always smoked. That was their generation. They were the smoking mm-hmm. generation, you know, born in the 30s. And even my mom, you know, she had quit a couple different times, and the last time she had quit for about 3, almost 4 years. But then when my stepdad had his heart attack, bingo. I mean, she was a mess.
A trigger.
The first thing she mm-hmm. went to, and she's just like, she kicks herself for picking it back up, but yet at the same time, she was just like, I had no other way to cope. It was just too much stress going on, you know? And I feel like for the people that are looking at this for 2020 as being one of their resolutions, I'd say my best advice to you is take every hour at a time and don't browbeat yourself. You know, it's no different than any other addiction that you're trying to wean yourself off of. You're going to have the mood swings. You're going to have the times of being in tears. You're going to have the times of people looking at you and judging you because you're having that craving so bad. And you might even pick one up. But you're not defeated. And there's always tomorrow. You know, but yeah, that's one of the big ones that a lot of people struggle with. And then they feel, I've seen so many people end up in worse shape because the people around them were making it such a focal point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being so nitpicky with them, like, you should be able to just do this, you know, not realizing that there's an undercurrent of emotions that are linked to the addiction. Doesn't matter if it's been 40 years. There's something as to why we picked it up.
Right.
And some people can never go back and look at that. You know, I have my stepdad, he will never quit smoking. He has COPD. He has a heart condition. He's tried. But there are some people that to take that step is going to be the straw that breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And we never know, we're never quite sure. Like for him, for instance, he just tried the patches, and the patches bring on really vivid, vivid dreams. So you're talking someone who was in Vietnam, he was in the bush, he was a ranger, sharpshooter, this kind of thing. And the nightmares came back so bad, my mom was just like, nope, we're taking the patches, gone, here's a pack of cigarettes. Here you go. I'm sorry. And because of how the side effect was getting, impacting him worse, that she was afraid it was going to cause him to have a heart attack in his sleep.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes what works for one doesn't work for another person, too, you know, because we're all different. Yeah. I know I tried... When I was trying to quit, I tried, I don't even know the name of the product right now, but it's a prescription pill form.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and, yes, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And And I tried that. For me, after day two, I was like, no way. I did not like the way that it made my body feel.
Yeah.
No way. I felt so ill. And it's not, you know, it's not an excuse. I mean, even the people, my loved ones around me, oh, you're just, you know, that's just what you're thinking. No, I really felt ill. And I could no longer choose to take that to help me quit smoking. There was just no way. And it's funny because my mom, too, she had tried that herself with the same feeling that I was getting. And, you know, so we're related, right? So it's funny. It's like the two of us both felt those side effects, and it didn't agree with us. It didn't agree with me, for sure,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But yet the patches worked for me. So everybody's different.
Exactly.
Some people's cold turkey.
Yeah.
They can do it. And like I said, it's an individual thing. It really is. It's an individual thing. And some people even just quit on the Nicorette gum. They can do it. And, you know, but, you know, I think when you get to that point of when you're ready, that's the thing, the lack of pressure. So it goes again with what we were talking about, that pressure or that resolution, setting yourself up for failure. So I think that once you take that pressure off, when you're ready, when the person's ready, then it's their time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah. I agree.
And I remember when I quit, this was awful because it would make me want to smoke, and I had to tell my friends and family, please do not ask me if I'm still not smoking because it would drive me crazy. Don't ask me because it just makes me want to smoke, you know? It's like that.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, this is driving me insane. Please stop asking me. And they did. And they did, but it drove me insane because it did the opposite effect. You know, and when they would put attention to it, oh, you're doing so good. It's been how many days, you know? And I was like, no. No, because all I want to do is, you know, go have one now. Thank you very much. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So,
oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if my advice to the listeners, you know, is if you do decide to quit when you're ready to quit, it is helpful to tell your family, you know, try not to put any attention to it because it is a very personal, private thing. So, and it can be done. So just giving anybody listening some encouragement on that can be done.
Yeah,
but it's
definitely.
Honestly, I mean, eventually it goes away where you stop thinking about it every day, but it is a daily thing. You have to be mindful, aware of what your triggers are. There's a lot to it. And, you know, like you said, I mean, there's a lot to it. And so I had to write down what were my triggers, certain foods, certain things would be a trigger, certain foods, maybe a beer. Something like that would definitely trigger me, or even a particular person, you know, that smoked. Being around other smokers, I had to stop being around people that smoked for a little while. Now I'm fine. But in the very beginning, I had to separate myself from, you know, because they're triggers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Oh, yeah.
Most definitely.
So there's another big one on the list here, resolutions, and that is paying off credit card debt. That's a big one, too.
Yeah. That's always a big one. And everybody struggles with it, and I can tell you, you can survive without your credit cards. It takes work, but you can get there. The credit card debt, I mean, it is one of those areas that once you start, it's like this big gaping hole that just keeps pulling you more and more in. And I've seen money issues with credit card debt and everything like that destroy relationships, destroy marriages, destroy families, you know. And it's not something we think about, you know, because we're a very credit-happy society. Oh, you want to buy this? We'll give you credit. You know, 24 days interest-free. Come on down, you know. We're like, oh, yay, okay. And then here on the back end, you're paying three times the amount. You've paid now for that furniture for 10 years. And you need new furniture already. You haven't paid it off. Yeah, that's a one that a lot of people get extremely stressed with, too. And trying to figure out how to not only manage it, but be able to actually bring it down. Have you had fun with this one?
Oh, yeah. I've been there. It's... I'm trying to find the wording for it. It's a big it's a big lie that you say to yourself, right? So you go and you live beyond your means. And I'm not saying this for everybody, but I'm saying when you're maxing out all your credit card debt or all your credit cards, right? You're not being mindful of what you're spending. You get that bill in, and you don't realize the high interest rates, you know, and then just paying off your minimum payment isn't going to pay off the debt. It's going to take how many years, right? Years. And I think people get into this trap. I call it the trap. You know, and you think, and it starts off very, you know, you might have a credit card and a small, you know, balance on there, and I'll just use it for gas. I need it for this. I'll just pay it off when the bill comes in. Some people can be diligent and do that, and sometimes you can't because circumstances happen in life, unforeseen circumstances, and you end up in this trap, and I call it the trap. And you're right. I mean, I have seen marriages, you know, end, people losing homes, you know, terrible things happening. And these credit card companies, my God, they're vultures, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a terrible spot to be in for sure. So you definitely want to be careful. It is a good goal, you know, if you can set a budget up that's detailed, and if you can, you know, stick to that and have those boundaries with yourself, okay, I'm going to pay an extra $100 this month, and I'm going to do this for the next year, you know, whatever it may be, and, you know, try to get that, you know, credit card debt down, and it works, and people do it, and I've done it. But you've got to stick to your guns and not use it and, you know, act like you never had that $100 anyway, you know, so.
Right.
That can be done. It can be done, but it's a trap. It really is.
It is, most definitely, you know, and some good ways to begin to address it. I think first, you know, whether you're single or a couple, sit down and be honest with yourself. Look at your balances. pull them out of your wallet. You know, there's a couple of quirks I had seen in the past, especially in the last couple of years lately, about credit card debt. And one of them said, keep the one card that has the best interest rate, that's a universal card, right, that you want to have for emergency purposes or you're going to be using as your vacation money kind of thing. Take that card, take a cup of water, put the card inside the cup of water and stick it in your freezer. This way, yeah, it's not in your wallet every time you go out to the store.
Right.
You know, keep your balance paid off. Just keep the card open and active. And then when you need it for an emergency purpose, yeah, you have to go through the part of having to defrost it to get your card back out. But you're actually going to have to think about what you're getting ready to use it for and why, versus the spontaneous purchases that we do, because that's where the credit card companies want us to be, right? They want to be in your wallet, and they want to entice you with these wonderful deals and things like that, so that when you're out and about, that's what's going to be your go-to. Oh, I don't have the money in the bank. I'll just use my card. And it is. It is the sand trap, right? You're never going to get out of the sand trap as long as it's still in your pocket. So that was one thing I had saw that I thought was really an interesting idea, that you take it and you freeze the card in some water. And then you have to work for it when you need it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a good idea. And I do really like that idea of, you know, narrow down your cards to what do you really need and why do you really need it? Because now you're going to be working more with your cash that's available. You end up getting to where you start planning more about your purchases, especially your big purchases, versus just going, oh, yeah, yeah, let me just go open a, you know, $5,000 account and go ahead and buy this. And, okay, well, now that's another $50 payment. And the credit companies really want people to stay at the minimum payment. That's the sand trap. You stay at the minimum payment. If you had, for instance, way back in the day, I had a Discover card that was a $1,500 credit limit with a minimum payment of like $20 a month. And I had a fairly decent interest rate. But $1,500 credit limit, the credit card companies look at you as now being a 10-year account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
They're not looking at you like, oh, yeah, $1,500, that's just a little bit of money. Oh, they'll be paying that on and off. We're not making any money off of these people. No, they look at you and they're like, $1,500? We're looking at 10 years before they can get that payment down, get that balance
right
down. We're going to be making bank on that interest.
Mm-hmm.
Even mortgage loans, they do the same thing. You know, they're looking at that. It's the interest money that they're looking at. That's where they make bank on you. And we always pay $50 to $100 extra a month on our mortgage payment. We've had our mortgage sold so many damn times in 14 years because we're impacting the money they're making off of us. They say if you can pay $50 to $100 extra a month on your mortgage payment all year long, you will have accumulated an extra mortgage payment towards your principal. And if you do this, within 10 years, you will have taken off a couple years off of your loan. You take off about five years
wow
of your loan. Yeah. So you can see why the lenders don't want us. They like to keep us at the minimum payment. Because then you're guaranteed income to them. They don't care if you're losing your house to make their payment. They don't care if you're having to eat Top Ramen. They don't care. They care about that interest money that they're making on your balance as long as you keep it up high and you can only afford that minimum payment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where you can mess with them is doing the overpayments. If you always figure that your credit card, if you put something on your credit card and you start figuring, okay, you know your minimum payment's going to be $25, but if you put in your budget that that payment is $50 in your budget, you're the one that's going to make out in the long run because you're going to cut paying off that debt into half the amount of time, and you're going to save yourself about 35% of whatever your balance was in the interest monies that would have been on top of that for the length of time, additional time that you're paying on it.
Yeah. That's a good way.
The little trick that they don't like.
Smart. Yeah.
And be cautious of those ones saying, oh, no interest for 2 years or 1 year. Yeah. Turn around and walk away, guys. Don't do it. I'm going to tell you why. When you're 1 year or 24 months that they're at zero, they're going to turn around and they're going to nail you with anywhere from 23% to 32% interest rate.
Yeah.
It's a bait and switch.
Oh, yeah. The trickery of it.
Yeah. It's a bait and switch. Yeah. And we fall for it so easy. That's the thing. We fall for it so easy. It looks like, yeah, that's going to be so great. Yeah. Watch out, you know. So you can pay off your credit card debt. You can live on cash. We've been doing it now for 14 years. It's not easy by any means because you do have to become money-wise about your savings as a backup for any kind of event that happens. But and it's really funny because in our society, they look at you really weird when you tell them you don't have a credit card.
You
suddenly grew like five eyes on your head and horns. Yeah, they do. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But if you can accomplish getting your debt paid down or paid off, you will feel like you have won the lottery.
Mm-hmm. It's a relief.
Yes.
It really is. Less pressure, less stress, more money in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
It is a relief.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, really, if we look at a lot of the resolutions, so many of them are related to the stress in our lives. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
You know?
Simplicity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, if we could simplify things in all aspects of our life, we wouldn't be under so much stress, I believe.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think if people could start to look at addressing the stress areas in their life, and begin to look at resolutions to the stresses, the other goals would be much more manageable and
mm-hmm.
achievable.
You're right. Yeah, I like that.
I feel so bad so many times when I look around at people and you can just see these weights just kind of hanging on them in their expressions and stuff. And it's like, you just want to go up to them and be like, okay, give me your five top stresses.
Yeah.
And start picking them apart. And you would end up seeing people just start dropping the baggage off to the side and going, oh, my gosh, why have I been carrying all of this around? And, you know, I've been looking for resolutions and I've been making New Year's resolutions and I can't ever get anywhere. But they never looked at the baggage they were carrying to try to accomplish those with.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It is amazing. All right. So, three big ones: diet, quitting smoking, and paying off debt, credit card debt, or debt in general, what we touched up on. What tools do you think? For the listeners, what tools do you think, rather than having a resolution, what do you think would be helpful for people to do it differently, and how?
Damn, that's a good question. We're going deep, Tina.
I know.
I love it.
Not too deep, but
yeah.
Just some small changes that people can make, you know, in order to have those tools in their toolbox so they could be successful.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. So if we let go of the term resolution and instead begin to look at changing up timing, like you suggested, looking at how do we want to feel is a big
mm-hmm.
one. Even on the life changes that we're wanting to make, look at how you feel about those life changes. If it's not feeling good, then hold off on it. Maybe the timing's not right. Maybe it's going to be better in the spring that you can look at it again.
Mm-hmm.
Start small with things that are going to be not stressing you out about doing. You know, such as the, say you're wanting to exercise more and going to the gym just gives you anxiety and dread or any of that things, you know. Instead, look at, hey, you know what, I'm going to start taking a walk around my house or my neighborhood a couple times a week. If we can begin to look at the perspectives of how the goals we're wanting to dabble into and how they feel for us and then change it to what feels better, you're going to have much more success, I feel. How about you, Tina?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. It's perfect. Absolutely agree with you with everything that you said. Definitely the timing, how you feel about things, and making small changes, you know, a little bit at a time. It releases that pressure, right? It relieves
right.
you of that. It'll take away that feeling of failure, because even if, let's say, you slip up, right? And you, I mean, even with smoking, you have a cigarette, or with diet, you have, I don't know, that chocolate cake or whatever. That doesn't mean everything is ruined, right? You just start again, begin again the next day, and you just keep plucking away at it. Same thing with the debt. You just, small changes, and you just keep plucking away at it. And I think if things can be in balance, right, in moderation, or I think I truly do feel, in my experience, that with moderation and balance, I think that, you know, all these things can be accomplished. I think anything can be accomplished, but I feel it's like a better flow.
Yes.
I feel with doing it this
yeah.
way, there's a better flow, and definitely less chances of burnout, for sure.
Yeah, and less chances of letdown.
Yeah.
I feel like when we feel like we are letting ourselves down, it just becomes a bigger and bigger spiral, and we start adding more stuff to that spiral. You know, it's like one thing keeps attracting another one, and then it just keeps filling and filling and getting bigger and bigger. You know, and everything, you know, like for me, losing weight, I don't use a scale anymore. The scale depresses me. And
yeah.
if you're someone that's one of your goals is to eat, you know, better and start listening to your body more and perhaps have weight loss come into play, lock your scale away. Go by how you're feeling, because this way you're not going to have those letdowns that end up bringing you into the depression, and the weight's not going to go anywhere when we do that. You know, and that goes with any of these goals, these achievable things we set for ourselves for life changes and New Year's, you know. Take some of the things that you know add stress to the situation and take them out of the equation.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
There is nothing better than waking up one day and you put your jeans on and you notice that they zipped up and you didn't have to lay on the bed and do the wiggle worm to get into them. Right? You don't need the scale to sit there and say you were the same weight as you were last week. But today, those jeans, man, they slipped right on. You know? Hey.
Yeah.
You know? That makes a big difference in your mentality and your emotions, and you're going to be able to keep going. But if you keep looking at the number on the scale and it's not changing, you're going to get depressed and defeated. Same thing with your credit card debt. Quitting smoking, quitting drinking, any of the goals you're putting out there, sometimes you have to remove some of the check-in pieces, you know, and just kind of go, I'll check in 6 months and see where I am, you know, go, okay, you know.
I do that too. I do that too, where, well, I'll check in and, you know, and I have said that in 6 months and see where I am. It's funny you said that, because those are my exact words. Oh, my gosh.
When my girls were teenagers, I didn't even own a scale. I wouldn't allow one in the house.
Yeah, that's good, though.
Yeah, because teenage girls get so focused. Hyper-focused about their body and their weight and the number and everything. And I got rid of it. I threw it away.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let them get on the scale. I said, if you have to check your weight, you can do it when you're at school, but not in the house, because they were staying hyper-focused on it. And for teenage girls, it can end up causing a lot of eating disorders.
Right.
To begin to form. I had my youngest one. She was starting to do that of like, no, I don't want to eat. Oh, I'm going to eat like these three crackers. Okay. You know, like,
yeah.
Because of the peer pressure, you know, and here they just went from being the chubby adolescent to now the very figured young teen, and that hyper focus was there, and I threw the scale out and I wouldn't let one in the house.
I you know, I agree with you. My girls aren't there yet, but I know you're telling me this for a reason, you know, and I'm thinking, well, it's not too far away here, so I know you're telling me this. But yeah, I can see myself doing that for sure too, especially if it got to that level. I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because it becomes like an addiction. That in itself becomes an addiction or obsession. You become so obsessed with your weight, your appearance, all of that, and it's really tough. It is so tough on the kids, on the kiddos. I mean, it was tough when I was a teenager, and now, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, so now, I mean, I can only imagine today what it's like for the kids today, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's okay to do no matter what your age. If that's one of your issues, throw the bitch away. Lock it in a closet. Give it to a neighbor. You know, just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, once you get rid of that stress, and that focus, your body is going to be like, oh, thank God. Okay, now what are we doing? I can focus on my metabolism, and I can focus on what's coming in and focus on feeling better. And the consciousness living within me is not at war with me anymore. You know, that goes with the other addictions, trying to kick smoking or any of those ones.
Right.
You know, a lot of those different areas. Yep. Sometimes we have to remove a few things that add additional stress that we don't need, and we'll be much more successful in achieving what we want.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there. Absolutely. Well, I think this concludes our show for this evening. Do you have anything else to add on, Shannon?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. All right, good.
There any other tips you could think of for them?
I do a lot of journaling. I like to write things down for myself. And in that journaling, it's not just about goals that I'll put down there in my journal, but I'm always checking in with myself how I'm feeling, setting intentions, writing out intentions. And I do that a lot. And I find that, you know, even with my meditations and my journaling, it's pushing that energy out. And it's making it where I don't know how to describe it. I'm setting that intention. I'm sending that energy out to the universe and making things happen for myself. Because, you know, sitting back and doing nothing, then nothing will change. but I do keep it positive. I do keep it high vibrational where, all right, I'm feeling this particular way. You know, like especially with food, like what we were talking about, I don't feel good when I eat this. I keep a journal. Okay. I'm going to change that part of my, I know you hate the word diet, but change that part of what I'm, you know, eating. And then I check in again, how am I feeling, you know, when I don't eat this? Oh my gosh, I feel so much better. I have so much more energy. And then I just keep, you know, I keep notes of that. Just other things too. Drinking water was a big one for me. Drinking much more water than what I was drinking. And I kept a journal of how much I drank. And it's not an obsession. I kept a journal, but I didn't religiously do it like every second I had a glass of water. But I noticed what I was drinking. I buy the bottled water from Poland Springs, and I would just notice how many bottles that I would drink. And, okay, wow, I felt so much energized. I didn't drink enough water that day, and I felt terrible. And so I noticed that water, you know, I know it does for a lot of people. For me especially, just has a super effect on me if I don't, you know, keep hydrated. Probably because of what I do for a living. I'm always on the go. So I'm burning a lot of energy with the physical work that I do. So it's really important for me. And so I feel one of the tools that are really good for people to do is to journal and, you know, just write things out. And, of course, do that mirror work, too. I know I touched on it earlier. But really, it was hard at first. I thought it'd be easy, but it took some practice. And to this day, I don't look at that part of my body in shame or disgust or anything like that. I look at it with love. And it really totally changed my perspective.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So those are just a few things that I do that help me, you know, with some goal setting and maintenance. So I think it's important.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. The water was a good one. We had forgotten about that one, but I know that's a resolution a lot of people make of drink less sodas and junk and drink more water. And it can be a challenge to get off the sugar addiction.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. But that's a really good way, the way you explained it with the journaling, to use that tool to be able to help you stay on track or just see how you're progressing and when it feels like you're not, and you can really kind of see, oh, yeah, those couple of days I was doing these other things, I wasn't getting enough water that I was, and or I was eating these items and feeling more dragging down. Yeah, I think that's fabulous. I love writing. I love writing and journaling. It's a great venue to do so much.
Yeah, it's something about it, having it written down and then reviewing it. It's not that it's a different perspective. It is just that it's bold. It's right in front of you. You know, you're looking at it. It doesn't slip your mind or you forget about it. It's there and you can take a look at it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And you can't quite lie to yourself.
Sometimes.
You know, you're like, no,
right.
I didn't have that chocolate cake 2 days ago. No. And then you're looking at your notes and you're like, yeah, bitch, you had 2 pieces of cake that day. No.
Right. No, you can't lie to yourself there. That's true.
Right. Going back with an eraser. Oh, it was this. The cat ate it, really.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. It's been fabulous tonight. I'm so glad to be back on air with you.
It was great to be back on air, and it was a lot of fun. I can't wait to be back next week, and Natasha will be back next week as well. So it'll be great for the three of us to be together, and we'll choose another topic. I don't know what it is at this moment, but we will be advertising in our group, in the Sacred Embers group, and thank you for listening, everyone. It's been a great show, and we will see you next week. Have a good night, Shannon.
Have a good night, Tina. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.